Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting video streaming live from our studios in New York City. We're heard all over the world. And if you'd like to watch this, and you've been watching it up to this point or the last few days on Facebook, we're going to be moving that over to, and have, to YouTube. And if you're into health and nutrition, we're going to give you a lot of it. And then we're going to take on some other issues. For example, on public health issues, we're going to look at Wi-Fi and cell phones and those cell towers. And what do they do to us? What do they do to our brains? We need to know this. Now, whether you ultimately choose not to be concerned or concerned, at least you'll have these very important facts today. Also, I'm going to spend a few moments talking about an article I read by Jennifer Stitt of Eon. Before you can be with others, first learn to be alone. The power of solitude. So I'm going to talk about that. Also, from the environment, the new information from our National Academy of Science, just to put it in perspective, that is the most respected and important, the final arbiter of everything scientific in the United States, is the National Academy of Sciences. Quote, warning of sixth mass extinction, scientists implore global action. So now they've put it official. We're into a mass extinction era, the sixth in the history of humans being on this planet. And even before, and what are we doing about it? So we're going to take a look at that. Also, I've been telling you that the Larsen C shelf, which is about the size of Delaware, over 110 miles long, would break off. Last night it broke off. So now it's no longer attached to Antarctica, which means that all that ice behind it that was being prevented from going into the water is now going into the water. And you're also in what is known as chaos theory. There is no person on Earth who can accurately predict how much ice will break off, how fast it will break off, because you have feedback loops that are not predictable. And throwing in a little wrench into this is there's now massive rainstorms over Antarctica that we've never seen before because of global warming. So imagine that it's warm. Imagine now you have rain hitting ice, which will melt it, and that means more calving than breaking off of ice. I'll get to that. Also, if time permits today, in the second part of our program, Thinking Dangerously, the Role of Higher Education in Authoritarian Times by Professor Henry Giroux, and I'm going to give you some video clips, one about milk. Now, growing up, we all were encouraged to drink milk, And whether it was homogenized or not, where I came from, we preferred it non-homogenized. So every morning, the milkman would put in that little container outside, gave it some insulation, would put 2 quarts of milk, and their cream was on the top. And that was the tastiest part, because my mom would take that cream and mix it into my oatmeal and put some cinnamon. That's primarily what I ate. My other brothers liked bacon and eggs or sausage. And now we know a lot more about milk. And we're going to play a video clip. It's not long, but it says if milk commercials were honest. So you're going to watch it. So if you're watching us over Progressive Radio Network, PRM.FM, you'll be able to see it. We'll download it onto YouTube later. We have hundreds and hundreds of films on YouTube, by the way. There's a public service. And also today, I'm going to play a clip that will, in the second part of our program, because I have no guests in the second part, I want to get to this, about millions of Italians going to the streets in some of the biggest demonstrations in Italy's entire history, protesting mandatory vaccines. It's a long clip, and I'm only playing like a minute, because I want you to see something that is virtually blacked out in the American media. You won't see it anywhere. in the American media. So would you think you have more than a million people in a single demonstration, someone would say that's newsworthy. Indeed it is, except that it deals with a topic the American media, American industry, American government don't want challenged. If we start showing people by the millions in other countries protesting mandatory vaccine, maybe we get the idea we should be protesting it here. Well, we're going to protest it, all right. We're going to have a big press conference with some of the world's leading scientists I'm bringing. And yesterday afternoon, I finished tomorrow. I'm in England filming a person to finish this up. I have three more interviews and we're done. And I had two major lawyers, both of whom have children with autism due to vaccines. And over the weekend, New York Yankee rookie was home run hitter king, hit more home runs than in a practice game anyone else. Well, these guys hit it out of the ballpark yesterday. Hard hitting. When you finally see the film, you go, wow, we didn't know this. I'll simply say this. We have information, incontrovertible information, as of yesterday, that proves that our federal government knowingly and with malice aforethought engaged in obstruction of justice, criminal offenses. This is not hearsay, speculation, or conspiracy theory, absolute bona fide fact. And I'll be holding that off until the press conference, and it'll be the biggest press conference ever on the subject of vaccines. I've been laying low, doing my work for 2 years while vaccines, other films are around. And we're going to hit hard. And everyone who wants to know the truth will know it. What you do with that information is up to you. And also, there is a comedian on television. I think it's HBO. And he did an interesting piece. He was absolutely correct. His facts are correct. And I want you to hear what he has to say, something we've said, but he came to this on his own volition about bombing in Syria, even being in Syria. It's a sovereign country. We have no right to be there. But the entire media engaged in a lie. What was because they were misinformed, because they were not interested, or because they were complicit. But Assad did not, I repeat, did not engage in chemical warfare with his own citizens by putting sarin gas into their atmosphere. Didn't happen. Seymour Hersh, one of the most respected independent journalists in American history, showed us that. But now you're going to learn more about that today, of how you were lied to by him. So we have a lot to share. We always like to start with something very positive, informing us of what choices we can make to stay healthier. For example, I'm counseling someone yesterday afternoon who is terminally ill, and he was simply not aware that drinking soft drinks and sodas that are high in fructose corn syrup could damage his liver. And of course, he had non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, which is an epidemic in the United States. And when I explained what was in a soft drink and how that would impact the liver, he said, I didn't know that. The doctors got me on 17 different medications. No one ever said anything about stop and drink. I have not been told to stop drinking soft drinks. And I said, what else? What about your diet? Well, they didn't say anything. They just said moderation. And then he's eating the hot dogs, the hamburgers, the french fries, the stuff that causes disease. This is the latest study. This is from the University of California at Davis. This is published in the American Journal of Pathology, highly respected journal. I'm giving you this information so that you see that the information I share on this program today and forever is always based upon quality, independent science, not coming from industry. Quote, a new study in the American Journal of Pathology reports in this laboratory experiment that mice fed a Western diet, that's your typical American and English diet, which is high in fat and sugar, resulted in hepatic inflammation at your liver, especially in males. Moreover, liver inflammation was most pronounced in Western diet-fed male mice that also lacked lacked a particular receptor. The study is important because it links diet to changes in the gut microbiota, as well as the bile acid profile, opening the possibility that probiotics and bile acid receptor agonists may be useful for the prevention and treatment of hepatic inflammation and progression into advanced liver disease such as cancer of the liver. So, here's the message here. Your liver does two primary things. First, the liver helps cleanse the body along with the kidneys. It takes these toxins and takes them through, and it conjugates them, meaning it brings them together so your body can purge them out. And you'll purge out in your feces a lot of dead bacteria that the body no longer needs, undigested fibrous materials, dead cells, generally coming from the intestine itself, but also impurities. That's good that you can cleanse this. But the liver also does something that is essential for health. It allows the nutrients that we take in to be reformulated in the liver so it can be in its usable form when it gets to the cell through the bloodstream. For example, if you take a B complex, it'll simply say vitamin B6, pyridoxine. But the body can't use B6. It doesn't use it. The liver has to convert it from vitamin B6, pyridoxine, into pyridoxal 5-phosphate. Same way with ascorbic acid. It has to be converted into ascorbate. So there's all this manipulation of nutrients into the most bioavailable form where the cell is able to use them. So when you take chemotherapy, you lay waste, you play havoc with the liver. That's one of the reasons that Nicholas Gonzalez, Dr. Gonzalez, a cancer doctor and an immunologist, did not choose most of the time to work with cancer patients who had had chemotherapy. He preferred patient didn't, because the liver is essential for building up the immune system. And by the way, when you're drinking soft drinks and coffee is diuretic, and it flushes out micronutrients your body needs, like selenium that you need to prevent cancer, and copper in small amounts, which is still essential. So the more coffee you drink, the more diuretic your body is, the more acidic your body is, the more likely you are to suffer from pain by drinking coffee. Let's put it another way. If coffee were invented for the first time today, it would never be allowed, nor would sugar, processed sugars, because they're toxic. Be that as it may, it's showing you that almost everything that we consume in the Western diet adversely affects our liver, and that contributes to a precancerous liver, where there's a lot of fat in the liver. If you eat a lot of fat in a meal, where do you think that fat goes to? When you watch all these cooking shows, every single one that I've seen shows you eating the worst foods imaginable. And now they're not just showing you bad foods, but it has been a highly competitive. There's a clock and you got to get a dish, and they're competing, and there's one good. It's like a Roman amphitheater. It's like thumbs up, thumbs down, you're going to die, or you pass on to the next stage and become the best chef. Real chefs would never disgrace themselves by appearing in public like a bunch of dancing clowns. Could you imagine having a variety show where you had people from the New York Ballet, the Philharmonic, and if you didn't win, you were out of ballet. If you didn't sing better in the competition, being judged by a bunch of nut jobs that you could never sing again. We have made everything so foolishly dystopian. We're like a bad sci-fi movie. Our whole society, I'm making no exceptions, everything in our society needs to be re-examined. And how do you re-examine these things? And that brings me to this. You find the quiet moments. One of the reasons I've always lived on a farm or a ranch since I've been in New York City is because the power of being able to communicate with nature quietly. New York has a lot of wonderful opportunities and people, but quiet it is not. But when you're alone in nature and you're with yourself, then it's just a dialogue, hopefully with your authentic self and not your conditioned self. And that's where you resolve a lot of the issues of who are you, why were you born, what is the significance of this day compared to yesterday? Did you waste a day or a week or a month or a year because you were engaged in following your insecurities, and that never leads you to a good place, making decisions that you should not have said yes to and saying no to ones you should have said yes to, and giving you an opportunity to live your life in reverse, to take a look around now that it's behind you and say, why did I choose this? What was in my mind? Who was in my life? Why would I do this? Would I do it today? And if not, why not? What lesson can I learn going forward? That's what solitude gives you. You can't be in solitude if every other second you're looking at your cell phone, on a telephone, in front of a computer, or in front of a television, or busy getting somewhere like a maze of rats, rushing to something. It really is not significant to who you are as an authentic being, but rather simply pays the bills, including long commutes. And you're not going to be in solitude, even though you're alone in your car, because more often than not, if you're in that car, once again, you're on a speakerphone, you're on the radio. We have a really hard time being alone with ourselves. It scares the hell out of us. Most people, the last thing they can tolerate. And younger people, no, they're not going to handle it. I remember once when I was a kid, probably around 10 years old, there was a woman named Hattie, H-A-D-D-I-E, who lived at the end of our block. I lived in a little 1,100 square foot house that's still there. And everyone had a little different way of looking at life on our block, but it was mainly older people. And we were the young kids on the block. And I really enjoyed going to this woman's house. She was a retired school teacher. And in my hometown, you didn't have to retire. It was not mandatory. So we had people teaching at 80 years old. In fact, I had people who teaching me who taught my older brother, 5 years older than me, Howard, taught my mother and father. They taught multiple generations. And these were considered the wise and patient men and women. They always had time for you. And this is what Hattie did. So I'd go up there, and she had a backyard. And it's one of those magical backyards. It was the same size of all the other backyards, but it just was filled with flowers and honeybees and little fountains and a little tiny goldfish pond. And she would sit there on a swing, and she'd give me a cup of sassafras tea with some honey in it and a cookie. And she said, "Now, what's on your mind, Gary?" And I'd ask her about things. And my mother said, never filter the truth. So I'd ask her, I said, "What's it like being old?" I'm 10 years old asking a person who's probably 75. And she said, "Well, you get the benefit of having lived a full life and meeting a lot of wonderful people and using your skills to help those people." And she said, "So that's what it means." And I would always go to her rather than everyone else who was too impatient or didn't have the time or saying, "Oh, God, here comes Gary. He's got another, stupid question." But she was always patient. So just imagine that wonderful generation. That was the greatest generation, the one who were born before the Great Depression, lived through a lot of hardships, but still maintain a sense of manners, morals, ethics, civic duty, caring about others, always volunteering for whatever was needed. There are people doing that today, probably about 10% of the population. That's a lot of people. You're talking about 32 million people. That's more than live in New York State. It's almost as many as live 39 million in California. So it's not that we don't have a lot of good people doing good things because they love society, they care about it, they're deeply impassioned, but that also means you got 90% of the American population, or 300 million people, who are not giving themselves the opportunity to have that inner reflection, to go deep within themselves, find that quiet moment, and reflect. Because it's only in those deep reflective moments that those epiphanies, those wonderful moments of enlightenment occur. Virtually all of my ideas, my creations, inventions come in these quiet moments, generally when I'm gardening or Landscape architecture is my passion. I put up some photos of my home, the gardens in my home, I should say, not the home. So you just see that was a sand lot. There were only two trees. That's it, two trees on my property when I bought it. And it was what I could afford at the time. It was just a sand lot. Now look at it. And everything there I did, but I was always thinking, because you're communing with nature. You're there, you're with nature. Here's what Jennifer Stitt has to say on this. She says, in 1840, Edgar Allan Poe, he's a famous poet, described the mad energy of an aging man who roved the streets of London from dusk till dawn. His excruciating despair could be temporarily relieved only by immersing himself in a tumultuous throng of city dwellers. He refuses to be alone, Poe wrote. He's the type and the genesis of a deep crime. He is the man of the crowd. Now, reflect for a moment. How many people are afraid to be alone? They want to be watching television because they're connected. Everything's passive. Walking up and down the streets or going someplace with lots of people, you're not connected with them. Like many poets and philosophers through the ages, Poe stressed the significance of solitude. It was such a great misfortune, he thought, to lose the capacity to be alone with oneself, to get caught up in the crowd, to surrender one's singularity to mind-numbing conformity. 2 decades later, the idea of solitude captured Ralph Waldo Emerson's imagination in a slightly different way. Quoting Pythagoras, he wrote, "In the morning solitude, that nature may speak to the imagination, as she does never in company." Emerson encouraged the wisest teachers to press upon their pupils the importance of periods and habits of solitude, habits that made serious and abstracted thought possible. This is the most interesting part of this little script, and it's over then. In the 20th century, quote, "the idea of solitude formed the center of Hannah Arendt's thought, a German-Jewish emigre who fled Nazism and found refuge in the United States. She spent much of her time studying the relationship between the individual and society. For her, freedom was tethered to both the private sphere and the public and political sphere. She understood that freedom entailed more than human capacity to act spontaneously and creatively in public. It also entailed the capacity to think and to judge in private, where solitude empowers the individual to contemplate their actions and develop their conscience, to escape the cacophony of the crowd, to finally hear herself think." Now think about this for a moment. I'd never heard this before, and I do a lot of reading, especially on philosophy and history. Quote, "In 1961, the New Yorker commissioned her to cover the trial of Adolf Eichmann, a Nazi SS officer who helped to orchestrate the Holocaust. How could anyone, she wanted to know, perpetrate such evil? Surely only a wicked sociopath could participate in the genocide. But she was surprised by Eichmann's lack of imagination, his consummate conventionality. She argued that while Eichmann's actions were evil, Eichmann himself, the person, quote, was quite ordinary, commonplace, and neither demonic nor monstrous. There was no sign in him of firm ideological convictions. She attributed his immorality, his capacity, even his eagerness to commit crimes to, quote, his thoughtlessness. Again, thoughtlessness. It was his inability to stop and think that permitted Eichmann to participate in mass murder." So just like Edgar Allan Poe suspected that something sinister lurked deep within the man of the crowd, she is saying that a person who does not know that silent intercourse will not mind contradicting himself, and this means he will never be either able or willing to account for what he says or does, nor will he mind committing any crime, since he can count on it being forgotten the next moment. Mindlessness. So let's look at today. You have SWAT teams, 80,000, breaking into homes and shooting people who've committed no crime, shooting dogs. And just I posted a thing yesterday where this police officer jumped a fence into a completely innocent person's backyard, running through it. But there were two dogs posing no threat, and he killed both. He will not be prosecuted. That's just normal. But then again, when you can kill a person and not be held accountable for the cold-blooded murder because, quote, you feared something, that's a person that hasn't spent much time in solitude communing with nature and their deeper inner spiritual value. And why is it always a kill shot? Other countries, it's not. Here it is. We have militarized the police. We've militarized their mind. They no longer look at you as a citizen to protect and serve. More often than not, you're looked upon as the other. And with that comes a conditioned fear. That's thoughtlessness. And think of the drone pilot sitting in the comfort of an air-conditioned base out in Las Vegas, near it, in the Nevada desert, making a big salary, and all you do is sit like a computer game, except it's not a game. These people who you cannot accurately identify, so you don't have to see if you're killing, beheading with a bomb, a drone, you simply say if they're a certain age, they're enemy combatants. Well, of course, that means, and this was under Obama, who won the Nobel Peace Prize, you no longer have to be accountable. If there's any boy in there, doesn't matter if he's going to get milk, he can be killed and no one will be held accountable. Thoughtlessness, mindlessness. And you look at the invading countries, regime change, you look at people taking massive vaccines without ever questioning. The only time they question, and I put these two people on the spot yesterday, very good lawyers, and I said to them, you have amazingly important information. You have information no one has gathered before. Why? And they said, because my son, both had sons who are now autistic. I said, so, just so I understand, and I'm not being insensitive, I'm just being pragmatic. You only develop a consciousness about vaccine when it was your son, but not someone else's son. So if 2 million other people, and by the way, there are 2 million sons that have autism. So if there's 2 million or 10 million or 100 million or a billion people whose sons have autism, you don't give a damn. But when it's your son, suddenly it's a big issue. And you hear the response when you see the film. And they agreed. We're so damn selfish in our society, so thoughtless, like Eichmann, but with different outcomes and different motives. So when we engage in an obsolescent society, when we buy what we know is going to break down, but it's cheaper to get something new, and we don't care what it does to the environment, when we allow ourselves to vote Democrat or Republican, that's thoughtlessness in the extreme. When we don't care about whether our food is genetically modified or organic, we don't care whether or not we have a Patriot Act or National Defense Act that can take away our constitutional rights. We don't even care about the Constitution. We say we do. We don't. We don't care about mass incarceration for using marijuana. We don't care about all of our wars failing, the war on cancer, the war on drugs, the war on poverty, because the wars are only meant to be a metaphor for those people smart enough to come in and exploit it for financial gain. So right now, everywhere you look, we have a society that is indebted to those who have conditioned them to believe through propaganda and advertising that thoughtlessness is the highest state of moral authority in their lives. Therefore, they never have to worry about saying, I'm sorry. They never have to worry about being wrong. They never have to worry, like the New York Times, CNN, and all the other media, Democracy Now!, they don't have to say, yeah, we made a mistake, you know. No, I don't see anyone from Democracy Now! Staff going to Libya, walking the streets of the pearl of Africa for decades, that had more democracy than the United States, and saying, God, Man, look at this place. It looks like Hiroshima after the bomb dropped. And I supported this? Shame on me. Let me go to the woods. Let me spend a little time in a monastery. Let me do some aesthetic insights. Let me get back to my essential being to say, how in the world could I have supported this? Because of polemic? Because George Soros? How did I get here? But that will never happen, will it? Not in your lifetimes. You will not hear, I'm sorry, made a mistake. So what Hannah was talking about in her wonderful, important writings, what Chris Hedges is talking about, what Cornell West is talking about, what some of the great minds, Rabbi Michael Lerner, is talking about, what Edgar Allan Poe saw in 1840, what Ralph Waldo Emerson saw and encouraged, what Thoreau saw, is you must get to a point in your life where you're able to sit quietly and have a conversation with your authentic self so that you no longer empower the conditioned and non-authentic self, because then you become like Eichmann, not the same crime, but like Eichmann, you become a normal person conforming to society, and for all intents and purposes, you don't look or sound like a sociopath. Your actions become that, but you fit in. And isn't it time when we stop conforming to everyone's idea of how we should live our life and what our life should be and what our truth should be and what our reality should be? And then we become the conformist. We fit in. We go along and we never ask. If you think I'm exaggerating, why don't you go to every media in the United States, go to their advertising department and ask the people. You are putting ads on television that is causing diabetes and heart disease and cancer and arthritis in young children and toddlers. Do you take any responsibility for that? Now go over to the clowns at 60 Minutes, those buffoons who pretend to be journalists, and ask them, your salaries, your million-dollar salaries, and all your perks and your social position is paid for 70% by advertisements for drugs that have never been proven effective and are certainly not safe, but they are very profitable. Are you willing to expose them, your own advertisers, and the consequences to someone taking a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor and then committing suicide because that's one of the side effects? Do you take responsibility for that suicide from the drug you advertised or your company advertised? And they'll look at you like, no, why should I? So everywhere you look, you'll find this cognitive disconnect, this thoughtlessness that Hannah talked about, the Thoreau soul. When we immerse ourselves in the crowds of life because we're terrified to stand alone, be a part of ourselves and away from the consensus. If you're a dentist, do you ever have a second thought by your introspection of the mercury you're putting in someone's mouth? A pharmacist, the vaccine in someone's body? A psychiatrist, the electroconvulsive therapy that you're giving someone? A doctor, a statin? Another doctor, a female hormone replacement therapy that you know increases breast cancer, ovarian cancer, heart disease, stroke, and colorectal cancer and dementia? And then you'll get a little better grip on, wow, maybe it's time for some solitude and true introspection. I'm Gary Knoll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. How do I please you? 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 Girl, in your one way, in your one track mind, how do I please you? How do I please you? Oh, when I say that. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. You never know when you turn on the radio what I'm going to be talking about, because I like to blend in health. But how healthy can you be if all you want to know is how much carrots you can eat in a day and not understand the mind or body you're putting it in? So we look at the larger issues. Here are some of the topics we're going to be dealing with in the next few days. Tomorrow, an in-depth look at the controversies and politics behind chronic fatigue syndrome. Now, most people have an idea that chronic fatigue syndrome is a really debilitating condition. We're going to be giving you some brand new insights into it. And my guest is Hilary Johnson, author of the renowned book on Osler's Web. So you won't want to miss that. Then on Friday, we have Joanna and James Mortieri. They are two people who were living in Libya prior to Gaddafi's ouster and the destruction of the country. Now, I have not done a pre-interview with them, so you'll hear when I hear, but I'm going to ask them, you lived in Libya, you were around people of all walks of life, what was it like? Because I believe that we need to hear the truth, and the truth cannot come from the media. It simply isn't possible. We've been lied to. And then we were lied to about Iraq, and then we were lied to by the same people using the same words in Libya, and then we were lied to by the same people and the same arguments to get into Syria. And so it's the same people in the media lying over and over and over again. I have no respect. I don't read the New York Times anymore because I can't stand the lack of integrity within the system. I'm sure there are good people working there. That's not in to be challenged. And there's some very talented journalists. But do those journalists have the capacity to tell the truth, even when the people, the deep state that is behind it, says there's a line here you cannot cross? So, and then on Monday, I'm having Media Benjamin on. She's co-founder of the anti-war feminist organization Code Pink. And it'll be an interesting discussion. I'm not going to tell you what it's about, but you will not have heard it before. But in studio right now is Richard Gale. Richard is both a scholar and executive producer for a long time at this program. And we're going to talk about something that needs to be discussed. But before we discuss that, I want you to watch this video. This video, not on milk, we're going to go to one on the RT. How we're being lied to about the war in Syria. You need about the sarin gas attack. You need to see this because it's play into what we're going to discuss.
We are being lied to about Syria. We are being lied to by the president. We are being lied to by the mainstream media. This is my surprised face. Last week, famed Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Seymour Hersh revealed that the motivations and facts given by Trump for bombing Syria were about as truthful as a Bill Cosby testimony. Unless that testimony is for Jell-O pudding, which I still believe he legitimately loves. I will not let you sully the name of Jell-O. You remember Trump's justification for bombing was the use of chemical weapons by Assad. But Hersh revealed that the Syrian military did not use chemical weapons, that the U.S. military knew what Assad's military was doing at the time, and that the bombing was meant to hit a high-level meeting of jihadist leaders and did just that. Hersh's source said this was not a chemical weapon strike. That's a fairy tale. Military-grade sarin is odorless and invisible, and death can come within a minute. No cloud. So if it were sarin, there would be no cloud. But instead, there was a slow-moving cloud of chemicals. A bomb damage assessment by the U.S. military later determined that the heat and force of the 500-pound Syrian bomb triggered a series of secondary explosions that could have generated a huge toxic cloud formed by the release of the fertilizers, disinfectants, and other goods stored in the basement. Patients on the scene smelled of bleach, suggesting they had been exposed to chlorine. Remember, sarin gas has no smell. In that way, it's kind of the opposite of Steve Bannon. So if the U.S. military knew that this was likely not a chemical weapons attack, why didn't they tell Trump? Why didn't they go, hey, moron, what's happening in Syria? It's a goddamn mess, but it's not chemical weapons. Well, Seymour Hersh states that Trump's national security team did try to convince him, but they were about as effective as teaching math to a goldfish. Because even if you get past the memory issues, how's he going to work the abacus with no hands? Hirsch says, I learned of the total disconnect between the president and many of his military advisors, as well as officers on the ground in the region who had an entirely different understanding of the nature of Syria's attack. All this time, I was under the impression that Trump was just dumb and misinformed. What a relief to learn he's informed correctly, but chooses to be dumb. But why? Right? But why am I going through all this, right? If you watch the mainstream media, you already know that Syria did not launch chemical weapons.
All right, so in response to the Syrian government using chemical weapons against innocent men, women, and children last night,
take out his airfields and prevent him from being able to use them to bomb innocent people and drop sarin gas on them.
I'm guided by the beauty of our weapons.
Hitler, who didn't even sink to using chemical weapons.
Chemical weapons against innocent men, women, and children.
To bomb innocent people.
Beauty of our weapons.
To using chemical weapons.
Drop sarin gas on them.
The United States of America is back.
Or not. Yes, our corporate media apparently only buys Trump's snake oil by the gallon when it involves the reasons for blowing up other countries. Essentially, no serious discussion was given to questions about the chemical attack. With every other lie Trump tells, and we can all agree, he makes Lance Armstrong look like Sojourner Truth, right? With all his other lies, our mainstream media calls him out for being chock full of... The only thing they celebrate is his war propaganda. It's the equivalent of being upset with your friend for his endless lying in regards to everything, from foosball scoring to who bought the last round of drinks, except when it comes to the Tinder dates he's been murdering and storing under his bed. When he lies about those, you congratulate him and give him a job well done. And this is not the first time a president has led us into bombing a sovereign nation with the gleeful assistance of our media. Here are just three examples of many. The Iraq War. I'm not sure if you're familiar with this minor footnote in America's distant past, but the year was 2003, and a strapping young lad named Saddam Hussein had really gotten our goat. Following 9/11, Hussein was discovered committing the unforgivable crime of ruling a country in the general vicinity of the country that actually birthed the hijackers who attacked us. Plus, he sat atop a lot of oil that he refused to just give us. And he dropped the petrodollar, which is like our favorite kind of dollar. Luckily, his weapons of mass destruction program, as seen here, gave us an ironclad reason to invade. He was preparing to kill a million innocent people. Later, after he had been toppled, arrested, hanged, and we had killed roughly a million innocent people, we found his weapons program consisted of three guys with a slingshot. Which might not sound bad, but the slingshot could be retrofitted to launch stones the size of papayas. In our defense, after the million people were killed, the New York Times did issue a correction. It read, correction. Over the past 4 years, we reported that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction, and therefore the U.S. needed to invade Iraq, destroy their society, topple their government, and kill a lot of people. Please ignore that reporting. It didn't actually say that, but it should have. The Vietnam War started following the Gulf of Tonkin incident. Even in the name, it's a lie. The Gulf of Tonkin incident is actually two incidents that were actually one incident, which is actually only a half.
That's just to give it, all of his facts are correct. What we now can be certain of is that there was no sarin gas attack by Assad in Syria on his own people. There was, however, notice to the United States and its allies that they were going after some terrorist in a particular facility that they believe was a munitions facility. and they put a big bomb in there, and it blew it up. What they did not know was that there were fertilizers in there and chlorine, and it exploded that, and that's what caused the cloud, because sarin has no cloud. You can't see it. It's invisible. And also, it lasts, and this didn't last. People went in there and were helping people almost immediately. But that gave Trump then the excuse to launch those 50-some missiles at an air base. And so Hannity comes out and says, America's back. You mean being a warmongering imperialist nation? That means we're back, killing innocent people. That means we're back. But just imagine this. Now we see a report that the people who are surrounding Trump's son-in-law to get advice, to give advice, are all from the munitions companies. So the war makers, the profiteers, are combining with the policymakers, and that's known as fascism, to make sure that we get more of these missiles. And how many missiles have we thrown into Libya and Syria? 84,000 in the recent past. Every one of those we have to buy. Every one of those are very expensive, cost plus. So billions upon billions of dollars every year are going to people to keep us believing lies. And that's why, where do you go for your truth? That's where we come into our discussion, Richard. I want you to share with us just some ideas of what has happened to much of our liberal community, because many of the liberals are so tired of being lied to and manipulated, they've become gone over to the progressive side and are now looking at everything differently. Tell us about the betrayals of the liberal corporate establishment, the Democrats, under Clinton and Obama, and what the media is not covering, what is not being debated, what is not up for discussion, and yet it's right in front of all of us, and we're impacted by it.
I think one of the things that we're witnessing right now is, in addition to the collapse of the middle of the liberal contingent that was very strong at one time, was actually much stronger when we think about it during Clinton. I mean, there were a lot of the labor movement was up in arms against NAFTA, and we had the riots in Seattle against the World Trade Organization, and there were always the riots going on when the G12 met, now the G20. In part, 9/11, I think, contributed a lot for the blowing out of the wind of the liberal class. I also contributed to the demise of the middle class. The middle class always had a kind of an intelligentsia, and the middle class today is being wiped out. And there was this, those good ethics, those good morals of many people in the middle class. Look, I grew up in a middle class family, and you know, part of the 60s, 70s revolution. I think most of us were. But there was, I think, a sense of how to organize, and we've lost that. That's one thing I think we've lost. And as you've been saying right along, the liberals have just bought into the status quo of the Democrat Party. And with Clinton, with the new Democrat, the Clinton-Gore Democrat, was a reinvention, a rebirthing of the Democrat Party as the middle-of-the-road conservative Republican, as the Republicans kind of went off into a far right extremism and fueled by the Christian right as well. So when we're criticizing the Democrat, it's the same kind of criticisms that we had towards Reagan or we had towards Nixon. The Democrat Party has turned into that today. And so we don't see, there was no big uproar against Obama's trade agreements, the Trans-Pacific and the Atlantic agreements. Anybody who has a,
those were progressives. We helped lead the charge by bringing on the people from Public Citizen. We did over 60 programs on the dangers of the Trojan parts of the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the TTRP.
AP. Yeah. Right, but we're not seeing it amongst seeing this amongst the Democrat those who follow and continue to voting for Hillary. And there are those certain individuals in the party who are right on with a couple of the issues. I mean, Elizabeth Warren and breaking up the BRICS, that's, you know, we can go along with that. When we look at her foreign policy stance and
Bernie Sanders' foreign policy.
And Bernie Sanders.
They're imperialistic.
And Bernie Sanders, who will continue to vote for defense budgets because Vermont benefits, his state of Vermont benefits from defense contracts. So there is no holistic vision behind the liberal anymore. When we speak about a political holistic political vision, what we're speaking about is seeing all the dots connect between economics, between political decisions, between social welfare, between health, between all these different kind of issues. Rather, it's just, and we just see this within the Democratic Party and its fracturing, is they've not been able to connect the dots between all the different issues and how one fuels another. And therefore, they placate to the private corporate interests because of it. And this is a serious problem.
You worked up a list for us today.
We have, yeah. So there are things like we look back, and anybody who kind of understands some of the basic fundamental economics, what happened in 2008 crash, that was Bill Clinton to blame, the Glass-Steagall. So where's the opposition to keeping the bringing it back. Again, you know, we had mentioned also the trade agreements. There was very little. Even the labor didn't even move up on that. We're failing to. There's been very minimal efforts to really pass regulatory legislation on the big banks.
Can I see that list, please?
Yeah,
I'm going to run down this list rather quickly. I'm not going to go into depth. Just the title of it for this audience will be more than enough. Here are the things that the liberals under Obama and under Clinton could have and should have made a really major focus on, but didn't. They didn't challenge NAFTA or other trade agreements. They did nothing to reinstate Glass-Steagall. They allowed all the payouts, billions, hundreds of billions, trillions of dollars to the banks and did not object to that, yet not a penny went to the average homemaker. And not a penny went to small businesses. There was no effort to put money back into reforestation to help our environment, nor to harness geothermal from our giant geothermal source or wave power in the ocean. And only if you were politically connected did you get your solar company up and running. There was minimal efforts to pass legislation to break up the big banks. There was no concerted effort to tackle the human rights issues behind commodity trading. They had a lot of lobbying to continue and unabated. They did not reverse Citizens United, and they have never once challenged ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, which has caused more than 25,000 bills to become laws, all in secret, that benefit corporate America and not you and I. They have not challenged monopolies, and we're at a point now where one big company is absorbing, AT&T is absorbing Time Warner. In military, they continue to support the military-industrial complex. They support the Patriot Act. They brag about supporting the Patriot Act, which is fascism with a capital F. They consistently vote in favor of the defense budget. They never challenged and reduced it, which is really close to $1.4 trillion. In fact, we exposed it once with a military contractor on this program, showing you how the amount the public sees is only one item. All the other items are a part of that as well. They permitted the National Defense Authorization Act to go forward without strong contesting. They had no efforts to rein in the drone program. They failed to honestly have an honest, open investigation of 9/11. Now, I cannot tell you the truth of 9/11. I can tell you everything we were told in official version is incorrect. And there are a whole lot of scientists and engineers who would agree with that. We need a new introduction to that topic. We also have continued with the war on terror as if there's no other diplomatic way of dealing with these issues or religious ways to deal with them. Could you imagine having a consortium of all the religious leaders of the world who truly believe in peace and harmony going in throughout the world and holding counsel to citizens saying, we want peace now, we don't want war, what can we do to make peace in your country and how that might impact us? There was There was no congressional outrage when the U.S. was involved in Libya. It supported Libya, the invasion. It supported Ukraine. It supported Honduras regime changes. They were impotent when it came to dealing with Israel and Gaza and the humanitarian crisis in the West Bank and these places. There was no challenge to the Saudi relationship and selling them weapons. Then knowing, having the intelligence, they participated in financing 9/11, and they're the number one financiers of terrorism in the Middle East. And yet we say we want a war on terror. Well, then let's go after Saudi Arabia. You want a war on terror? Have a war with Saudi Arabia and Qatar and the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain. Then you're dealing with the progenitor of this. Otherwise, just utter grand hypocrisy. There was allowing a new Cold War with Russia to proceed unchallenged, no effort to downsize our military overseas, mute on and renewing our nuclear weapons buildup and putting $1 trillion more into that as if that's where $1 trillion should go instead of helping the poor, helping people who are underwater in their mortgages. So, and both liberals and conservatives, federal legislators have done nothing on what to do with homeless people, what to do with people who are losing their homes, what to do with small businesses that are being thrown out because they can't afford usurious rates, mute on finance reform, Citizens United still in place, and they have refused to engage in universal health care. This crazy way that we're dealing with health care is ridiculous. I'll deal with that in great detail coming up. And they have no prison reform. You know, when you have more prisoners than any other country in the world, something's wrong with you. Something's wrong with your laws and your sentencing. You're not looking at what can we do with this person other than putting them in jail. And there's where the private prison system comes in and says, we'll take care of them. You just guarantee that your laws make sure if they spit on the street, they can spend 38 years in jail, you know, or solitary confinement, which we'll charge you more for. It's insane. It's like no one in a position of authority understands how to connect the dots you were talking about. And so education reform, non-existent. Reversing Bush's bankruptcy laws, non-existent. No serious attempt to change how we subsidize corporations for polluting and manipulating us, non-existent. How to put corporate thieves who manipulate the currencies in jail instead of giving them a fine, non-existent. So this is fully on Obama and the corporate Democrats and the corporate liberals who align with him. Richard, thanks for being on.
Okay, thank you, Gary.
I'm Gary Nall. I want to thank you all for being with us today. We look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day. Now coming right up, Utrecht Lead.